Blog Talk Radio.
Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We, at Us Lifting Us, have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. You will be on the Blog Talk Radio site at that time. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, click on the Follow button. ULU members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs as well as topic suggestions for future programs. To join the community, go to usliftinguss.com. You can reach the Ulu community through the members-only portal. When you register for the Ulu community, please use the same name you used to join Ulu. Ulu's 2023 Annual Members Meeting and Convention will be held from Friday the 10th of March to Sunday the 12th. The theme for this virtual event is Reconnect, Recommit, Renew. Registration information is coming soon. Go ahead and put the date on your calendar, March 10th through 12th, 2023. Remember, this event is for Ulu members only. I am Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion, What is the Spirit of Ujamaa, is Brother Angti, who, like me, is a member of Ulu. Peace, Brother Angti. How are you doing tonight?
Peace, Sister Q. I am very well. Glad to be here. Glad to hear you. Looking forward to sharing with the Ulu family this evening, as always.
We're glad to have you here, and we look forward to your discussion, as always. So, Brother Angti, what caused you to want to speak on the spirit of Ujamaa?
Thank you for the question, Sister Q. The question takes me back to when we began this journey to build Us Lifting Us many years ago. And the question we were asking then is the question we still ask today. We ask of other Black folks, do you think Black people should be in control of the economics of our communities? Invariably, everybody says yes. And as we pondered that question, as we reflected upon it, as we pulled together an initial study group to do the research to better understand the kind of economics necessary for us to, A, control our communities and to propel our people forward, we obviously went early on to Mwalimu Julius Nyerere's definition of Ujamaa. And I want to share that with the family as a starting point for our conversation tonight. In talking about Ujamaa in his book, Uhuru na Ujamaa, Brother Nyerere says, first, it is an African word, and thus emphasizes the Africanness of the policies we intend to follow. Second, its literal meaning is familyhood, so that it brings to the mind of our people the idea of mutual involvement in the family as we know it. So that led us to begin to talk about controlling the economics of the Black community and redefining or expanding our definition of Ujamaa to say that Ulu defines Ujamaa as family-centered economics. Now, the first thing that struck us about Mwalimu Nyerere's definition of economics, of the economics that he was proposing to build in Tanzania, and as a model suggests that Black communities around the globe do something similar, we became quickly aware of the fact that the task in front of us, not only did we have to build an economic model that worked for us, but because an economy is the foundation or the building block of a civilization, what we really had embarked upon was the building of a civilization, a global civilization that would serve the needs of African people around the world. We understand that an economy is simply the means of production of goods, distributing them to the people who need them. So in our thinking, the term family implies blood ties to a common revered ancestor, or an ancient mother, father, or both. So family is understood as a set of biological and emotional relationships bound together by a spiritual energy that we have grown to understand and call love. Now, that's a lot, because normally when we think about economics, we're not talking necessarily about family bonds and family ties and how we are related to each other in the neighborhood. We're thinking mostly about dollars and cents, profit and loss. And so Nayeti forced us to go back to understanding this business of controlling the economics of our community at the foundational level. And so when he says that Ujamaa is familyhood, that expanded our whole way of thinking about the work that we have engaged to do in terms of building an alternative economic model for ourselves and our people. And we understood that at center, I'm sorry, were you getting ready to say something?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. At the center of this economic model that we are constructing together is this idea of relationships and relatedness and connectedness held together by love. That's a very different kind of way of being together in a space. And it changes how we start looking at each other. Because I think, Sister Q, you will agree with me that in today's neighborhoods and subdivisions and communities, a lot of what we used to think of as the Black community has been under assault for so long that it is weakening, it is frayed, and the sense of us being brother and sister to one another has never been as low and as weak as it is right now. We are armed to the teeth, and everybody is strapped, and the least little thing goes wrong and bullets start flying. The sense of the fact that we are a people, a family, that we are obligated to one another has seemed to be something out of yesterday. I don't know that still applies in today's communities where many of us reside. And so mm-hmm. when we say us lifting us is family-centered economics, our goal is to put family back at the center of how we do business together. Not only put family back at the center, because oftentimes many of our families are damaged. And so mm-hmm. what we have to reclaim as the fulcrum of our existence is the concept of love. Now, we have to understand that when we say love in this context tonight, we're not talking about romantic love. Baby, you sure look good to me. We're not talking about even brother and sister love. You know, we are talking about love as the executive force or energy in the universe. And I want to bring in one other author to help us with this idea. Many of us on the call will recognize the name Ra Unefa Amen, the founder of the Offset Society in New York, and they're global at this point. And he's written 50 books plus. But he says this about love. Love, then, is the emotion or executive force of our oneness with all. It is the emotional side of the experience of oneness. So when we as individuals, and I'm not going to use that word a lot tonight, but let's just use it for the moment. When we as individuals begin to experience our oneness, our connectedness with our sisters and brothers, our extended families, and I don't even like that term, extended families, our neighbors, and the world in which we live, as we begin to experience that oneness, that we really are interconnected and interdependent, the emotional reaction to that sense of oneness is expressed in the word love. So love really implies unity, because if there's no oneness, then there's no love. And this aspect of this oneness, this love, this is a spiritual force. And that's the point, that's the beginning point I wanted to start with tonight, that we are talking about a spiritual energy when we talk about familyhood and placing that at the center of how we are connected as brothers and sisters, as people, as community. That has been displaced, in my view. And it's time that we stop thinking about economics solely as businesses that are operating to generate money, and to ask ourselves the more fundamental question: how have we organized ourselves to provide for the basic needs, providing food, clothing, shelter, education of our children, health care, care for the elders? How we organize ourselves to do that speaks volumes of who we see ourselves to be. And so this profound understanding of love flows in and through the African concept of Ubuntu. I am because we are, and because we are, therefore I am. Now, if we've heard that many times, many of us, but when we slow down and really just chew on that for a minute, let it marinate for a minute, I am because we are, and because we are. In other words, there is no you and I. That's a false dichotomy. There is only we. There is only community, right? None of us are here by ourselves. as great as we may think ourselves to be, we didn't just pop up one day. No, there was a mother and a father, and we came through a womb, and boom, here we are. So even at inception, even at conception, there's a we. The genius of African philosophy captured that in this phrase, Ubuntu. I am because we are, and because we are, therefore I am. Even as we strive to be successful, however we define successful, as we strive for greatness, however we describe that, that only has meaning if it's done in a community. You can't be the greatest basketball player or musician if you have no audience. If you're on an island all by yourself, you have no sense of who you are, what you are here to do, et cetera, et cetera. So that all of us live and thrive inside of a we. And that recognition of the we-ness is where we want to center our thinking about how we organize our economics. We have to radically shift what we mean by doing commerce, and reason that we engage in commerce, and what we expect to get out of commerce. When we open the doors of our business, what is it we are attempting to accomplish? All of this has to be redefined, because we find ourselves in an economic model which says that the whole reason for setting up the business and opening the doors is to create profit. And what they
and
don't
tell us.
And
not just profit, but to own everything. That's the nature of the game.
But even
monopoly.
Yes. But the way that profit is generated means really quiet is kept to exploit. You know, the way this system operates is somebody is taken advantage of. Somebody is beat down. And if you resist that being exploited, then they break out the whip and the guns and the weaponry. And now you discover not only are you exploited, that is, your labor value has been taken from you. If you resist that theft of your value, then you get beat in the head. That's called oppression. Mm-hmm. And so we find ourselves in a social reality of exploitation. And we, therefore, find it incumbent on ourselves to create an economic model that instead of exploiting us, allows us to give of our gifts in service to one another. The byproduct of that activity is we will generate the money necessary to live. Mm-hmm. But we have organized our energy, our work, to be in service to one another, not to exploit one another. It's diametrically opposed to the economic model that has been thrust upon us. So in this African conceptualization of love, love is the principal attribute of the divine. In other words, love is the divine's idea. It is a component of the divine. And as such, love is not what we do. Love is who we be. Because we are incarnations of the divine. In other words, when we are our authentic selves, this divine spiritual energy flows through and out of us as us. Mm-hmm. Is this not what it means to be created in the image and likeness of the divine? So that's a question that I would put out for our listeners, because we find ourselves thrashing around in a social ocean, if you will, that says that the ultimate reality is material. That is why it is so difficult for the majority of the world's people, of the 7.5 billion people on the planet, upwards of 4 billion, to be in dire poverty. Something is wrong with the way humans have been organized on this planet. And the economic model, global capitalism, that runs the global scene is based upon the idea that ultimate reality is not spirit, but is material.
Mm-hmm.
Many of us may not think about that. But when the Europeans made incursions onto the African continent and encountered African people, they did not understand why when we saw the divine in the trees, in the rivers, in the air, in the ground, everything about our physical existence to us was an expression of this spiritual reality that was invisible behind the physical.
Uh-huh.
The Europeans scoffed at us. They said that we were primitive, that we were superstitious, that we didn't understand the science of how the world works. And not only did they scoff at that, but in centering this idea that the world ultimately is based on material, it excluded or pushed out the role of spirit in helping to organize how people live together. And brought in an existence of conflict and tension between peoples where before there was cooperation and peace. And so we have to be very clear in our work and in our organizing, in our conversations with family and friends, as we talk about building us, lifting us, as a cooperative economic alternative to the private ownership and domination of the system imposed on us by Europeans. We have to be very clear that for us as African people, ultimate reality is spirit. That's our starting point. Ultimate reality is spirit. And if we hadn't thought about that, if we hadn't embraced that, then that's something that we need to be in deep reflection about, because we are very clear that spirit, though it is immaterial, though it is invisible, though it is intangible, everything that we can point to that is physical, we know that it came first from the invisible and the immaterial and the intangible. In other words, it came from spirit and then materialized on the physical plane. The genius of African people was we had mastered how do you bring things from the spirit realm into the material realm.
For sure.
We've been disconnected from that technology, and we're working our way back to it. But we're very clear that once the idea begins in our minds and in our hearts, and we speak it and write it down, that's how we begin the process of moving from the invisible to the visible, from the intangible to the tangible, from the immaterial to the material. But it forces us to honor and reverence spirit. In other words, in America, it's like, you know the saying, I'm from Missouri, you got to show me. In other words, if I can't see it, touch it, smell it, whatever, feel it, it ain't real. And the African sensibility is that you may not be able to see it, touch it, feel it, smell it, whatever, but we affirm without doubt that spirit is more real than the computers and the telephones that we're conducting this program through. And so that starting point of spirit as ultimate reality then has to be reflected in how we organize our communities, how we do commerce together, how we trade, what's important, how we value life itself, and what is success, and what is the purpose, why are we here? All of these questions have to be part of the understanding that we build into the institutions that rest on this economy that we're building, this cooperative alternative economy. Let me pause there. There may be some questions. You may want to ask me something as well.
Yeah, there are no hands raised at this time, but I wanted to go back to what you said about the computer and the telephones and those other technologies that we use at this time. Those are based on how our bodies work. Somebody sat down and watched how our bodies function and then brought it from the spiritual into the physical and took it from inside of us and put it outside of us so that we no longer actually use some of the skill sets we have on a spiritual level. We become, you could say, lazy. You know, rather than me communicating with you in the spirit realm or through the ethers or whatever, now I use a wired device or some other thing. So, yeah, we have, and I think part of that is to arrest our personal development of these skill sets or to get us out of the habit of using them, because my understanding is people with melanin are better able to do that than the pale people. And so to level the playing field for themselves, they bring us out of what we do well and bring us into their world where everything is external instead of internal.
Right.
We do have a hand raised right now, so I'm going to take this call. Let's see. Caller with the last four digits, 8912, please state your name, where you're calling from, and make your comment or ask your question. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, family, for the conversation tonight. This is Brother Thurman calling from Richmond. And
peace,
I just
Brother
want to, peace. Wanted to, you know, give praise to Brother Anki for, like he does, to bring higher level clarity to things, a higher level conversation. I want you to continue on, but I just wanted to make sure that I praise you and other people recognize that when you're talking about these higher levels of realization that the ancestors had, they brought to us about love. And I just appreciate you bringing clarity on that, because that's vital that we get that as part of organizing ourselves and to build nations. And we've got to have that in place. And also you bring in a higher perspective, as the ancestors did, about family. And just on those two points, I just wanted to emphasize that and give you much praise. And thank you. And I want you to continue on and carry us further into the conversation.
Thank you, Brother Simon. Okay,
yeah,
Brother.
Thank you, Brother Simon. Much appreciated.
We do not have another hand raised at this time, so you will carry on.
Okay. So the last thing we said was that when we are our authentic selves, this divine spiritual energy that is in the cosmos. In other words, this is not just something lifting us, thought, something we thunk up, you know, a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
We are putting ourselves in alignment with the forces that govern the entire cosmos, that hold the planet in rotation, in revolutions around the sun, that cause the sun to rise every morning and set every evening. Like gravity, these principles govern how the world operates, whether we acknowledge them or not. Now, you can say, I don't believe in gravity, and go run off a cliff and say, gravity don't matter, you know, but when you hit the bottom of that gulch, you'll understand that there is a force called gravity. Similarly, there is a force in the universe called unity. And when that unity is achieved, you and I, as beings on the planet, experience the emotion that we have tagged love. What it really is a recognition that I am one with the deities and the divine beings, the air, the water, other sentient beings, trees, vegetation. I am at one with this creation. And in that oneness is power. And that gives us the frame of mind or the consciousness then to live in a certain way. When we see this society that we live in that is so fractured and fragmented, where life is really cheapened, where people are suffering and dying of diseases and sicknesses that are preventable, and we see all of this confusion and chaos, that is symptomatic of a people who are out of alignment with the cosmic laws of the universe. And our goal is to build a civilization starting from the ground up that realigns us with this cosmic law, so that the civilization that we create will be sustainable, will be peaceful, will be loving, and will be an environment in which life can flourish and not be tracking time to its demise. I've said in other broadcasts that if we don't get a handle on global warming and the clock is ticking, all of us are going to be very upset with ourselves for allowing a handful of idiots to squander the precious time that we have right now to be doing things that can prevent us from hitting that point of irreversible effects. But the people with the money have captured the politics and the government, and in their stupidity, they're standing around watching while the planet and its people hurtle towards towards outcomes that we don't even want to think about. But let me press.
But you know, brothers, honestly, so I don't think it's stupidity. I think what it is we assume that they need the same things that we do. I think that they are not even human. And so they don't need the same kind of air we do. They don't need the same kind of water we do. And what they're trying to do is create a realm where they can survive. And in so doing, they will destroy where we can survive. I don't think it's stupidity at all.
You call them the pale people. And I think by that you meant they lack melanin. And I think that when you're melanin deficient, it makes it very difficult to grasp these higher vibration concepts. Mm-hmm. And so, in other words, we are such a powerful people that power can be used for good or ill. Mm-hmm. When we are in alignment with cosmic law, that power is used in very positive ways that make life even more enjoyable. When we are out of alignment, that power can be very destructive. It's kind of like electricity. If it's harnessed and operating in the house and you just plug stuff in, it works. But if the wires get crossed, it'll burn the house to the ground.
For sure.
And so it's like we understand how to work with electricity. Others who lack melanin are rather foolish with electricity. And that's why even things like standing atomic energy, while it can be used to power a city, they instead use it to make a bomb and incinerate people by the hundreds of thousands. That's a conceptual misunderstanding. In other words, they don't see themselves as connected with the rest of life on the planet, and they behave accordingly. We understand that. Our challenge is we have to save ourselves. We're here to save the planet.
That's the bottom line.
And the human family. So we've seen the outcomes of the systems that they devise. We know that. Mm-hmm. It's staring us in the face. And we've made the decision that that's not the future we want for ourselves and our children. So therefore, it's up to us to realign ourselves and build the kind of economic model that works for the global majority of indigenous and aboriginal people who happen to be melanated.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, we are making the argument this evening that the spirit of Ujamaa is love. This energetic force that we are calling love becomes the guiding principle determining how we behave toward ourselves. In other words, when I love myself, I do not put substances in my body that cause my body to break down. I don't poison myself, in other words.
Right.
When I genuinely understand that I am a divine being connected to other divine beings, when I see Sister Q, I see a reflection of myself. And so I could no more harm Sister Q than I would harm myself. When I help Sister Q become all that she can become, she in turn, as she blossoms and flows and gives off light, her energy helps me to be even more of myself, and this constant reciprocity propels us to higher levels of living. Now, if I see Sister Q and I decide that she has something that I want, and I'm lurking around waiting for the opportunity to hit her in the head and take it, now we both have
lost.
There
you go. Now we've got a problem.
Yeah, but the choice is when I understand who I am as a divine being created in the image and likeness of this divine power, that thought would never cross my mind.
Absolutely.
So it's this guiding principle of Ujima, of love, it determines how I behave towards myself, towards my family and friends, towards my neighbors and others, to nature. I would not pollute the water or the air, because all of this is divine stuff. When
mm-hmm.
we carry this love energy into the economic arena, and this is where we get down to the practical applications of Ujima, it guides how
mm-hmm.
we do commerce together. How do we do business together? For us in Ulu, we understand that this African definition of family goes on to generate a very specific and particular kind of economic model. All our economic definitions undergo a radical shift. Our attitude about why we work shifts dramatically. We work not to earn a wage, but to provide a service to our fellow human beings. In other words, our notion of job is transformed from a job, which many dread going to, into sacred service. Stay with me. I know this sounds a little, we don't hear this kind of talk every day when we're talking economics.
Mm-hmm.
So someone is thinking, this sounds utopian. Let's keep it real. We need money to pay rent, buy groceries, clothe our children. I don't know about sacred service. So let's talk practical. Let's take a closer look at that job. When our forebears were enslaved and made to toil without being paid, I think we would all agree on this call tonight that that was wrong.
For sure.
Slavery was replaced by sharecropping, another form of slavery, and later by wage slavery, the system we still all toil under today. In other words, all of us, well, I won't say all of us, the majority of the 99% who are working, many of whom are punching the clock, and at the end of the pay period, whether that's 1 week or 2 weeks or a month, we get paid based on that hourly rate. We need to ask ourselves the question, where does the money in our paycheck come from? Obviously, it comes from the labor we expended that week or that 2 week period to help make that
mm-hmm.
Ford F-150 truck or that Big Mac hamburger.
Mm-hmm.
The owners and their agents paid us a small portion of the value our labor generated and put the rest of that value in their pockets.
Mm-hmm.
We walked out with a wage. They walked out with 4 times, 8 times, 10 times what they paid us, and they called it profits. Our labor generated all the profits, but we only got paid a fraction of what we created. That is a system
mm-hmm.
of rank exploitation. Most people who have jobs, whether they pay $5 an hour or $25 an hour, and for those who are making $25 or $35 or $50 an hour, they call that a good job, and they think that the system is a good system because they
mm-hmm.
have enough money to pay their bills, feed their families, set aside something for the kids to go to college, and take a decent vacation. And for them, that's enough.
Right.
At the other end of the spectrum, the person making $5, $6, $7 an hour finds they have to work 2, 3, or 4 jobs just to keep a roof over their heads and have a little something to eat, and there is no money for no vacation. Let's be real, right?
Right, for sure.
Now, if love is at the center of our economic model, somebody would say something's wrong with that. If this person is working three or four jobs just to make ends meet, that's not love. That's exploitation. That's the rich taking advantage of the poor, and it's not right. It's just as wrong as slavery was. We have to change the way we understand this system because it is a system of theft and exploitation, and it's getting worse by the day. So, you know, there was a runoff here in Georgia for the senator this week, and part of the news and the analysis came up that in Georgia, and I got to double check this, they were saying that the minimum wage is, I heard $5 an hour or $7 an hour at the very least, $7 an hour. If I'm your employer and you work for me, there's no way that I can say I love you and let you slave for $7 an hour, knowing full well that you're not going to be able to take care of your family at that rate, right?
Right.
But in this system, that's business. We don't ask those kinds of questions. Is it just? Is it fair? Is it equitable? The person should have got a better job. They should have stayed in school. They should have whatever, whatever.
Exactly.
Right? All of the rationale for it's okay for someone to be out here working a full 40-hour week and not having enough money to live on. That's what I mean recentering. Yes, sister.
Finish that thought, please, and then we have a hand up.
Go ahead.
Go ahead and take the call. All right.
Yes. Take a question.
Okay. Okay, let's see. Peace. Caller with the last four digits, 3440. Please state your name, where you're calling from, and ask your question or make your comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Greetings. This is Brother Shabaka. I'm calling from South Florida. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you very
loud
well,
and clear,
Brother
Shabaka.
All right. Great, great, great topic. And I want to piggyback a little bit, or rather I want to follow up a little bit on when you said we have to make it real, because a number of things that, you know, we have is a delusion. And sometimes we're not clear on what is real and what is not. I was on a meeting earlier today, and one of the presenters at the meeting was describing, you know, this elaborate, you know, we've had some innovations that has happened, you know, some outside of Atlanta, and of the possibilities of bringing about self-sustaining communities and societies and cities and what have you. And so I just asked a question. I raised the question because I think that we have to have a parallel strategy at hand. And I'll tell you what I mean by that, and maybe you can, you know, follow with what you see in terms of making things real as we engage and get people to move towards what would be classified as very destructive and hateful behavior to one of love. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes.
Oh, okay. My phone is making some funny kind of music. Anyway, the conversation centered around, you know, this person, you know, painting out this lovely paradigm, and I just asked the question, well, if you got land, if you got, you know, they was talking about we need to get homes and all that other kind of stuff, you know, the sort of like the middle class, you know, rhetoric that they push on us. And so I said, well, who are you paying your mortgage to? Who's collecting the taxes? If someone outside your community is collecting the taxes and you're paying your mortgage to, how does that contribute to what it is that you wanted to develop? So that was the essence of my question to them or to him. Now, my question is now, as a consequence of the things in which we want our people to change their behavior, what is it that somewhat in changing the behavior, how we change that behavior, insulates us, if we can be insulated, from the incursion of the people outside of our community who profit by draining our community of its resources, but in no way is interested in us developing and doing other kinds of things to bring about the love that you talked about, or at least the respectability that we used to have, as opposed to what we see that seemed to be growing or expanding in our community today of self-destructive behavior. I'll just wait and listen to your response, but thank you for giving me the opportunity to raise the question.
Thank you for that, Brother Shabaka.
Brother Shabaka, that's a very profound question. And when you ask the question, who are you paying the mortgage to? For example, in there's a document on our website called IFOWO, Sowopo Economics, all pulled together. And the writer, a member of UGLU, by the way, Brother Paul Grant, says that in African societies, they understood that land was sacred. It was a gift from the divine and therefore could not be owned or sold. It was there for the use of the people. Now, it was the function of the elder council to manage the use of that land, but the land could not be owned. It was a gift to the people in perpetuity, right? So in the model that was probably being discussed in that meeting that you were at, and your question put the issue front and center, who does the mortgage to pay J.P. Morgan for the mortgage, then J.P. Morgan is going to benefit from that, right? UGLU, for an example, we are building a community, family-centered, cooperative business enterprises. In other words, the people who work there are owners in the business. The community, the people who shop are owners of the business. The people who live in the neighborhood where the business resides are owners of the business. So that in the UGLU model, in the cooperative economic model, our goal would be to own the land in the name of the people who are doing the work. And when the surplus was compiled and tabulated, and we know the surplus is X number of dollars, then all of the stakeholders would agree to how that surplus would be distributed. So the difference between the cooperative model and this private ownership model that we struggle under. We do the work, but this small 1%, they take all of the profits and usually deposit them in their communities, leaving our communities bankrupted and in need of resources. So the beauty of, and so the change of behavior, Brother Shabaka, to talk to the second half of your question, has to do with, do we continue to participate in systems that are exploiting us when we have the agency today, right now, to build our own economic model and keep our resources flowing internally to benefit ourselves. For example, we shop at, let's just say we shop at a Macy's, or you plug in the name of the business, right? Kroger. Every week we go there, and during this holiday period, we're certainly going to spend some money in those institutions. When they tabulate their profits, that money goes into other communities. It doesn't come back to benefit us. If we were to operate, and that was part of ULU's vision when we began to operate at Ulu Mart. In other words, to create a space 150,000 square feet, we would have clothing and jewelry and cultural products and a coffee shop and farmer's market. In other words, everything, all of the goods that we need to live weekly, monthly, would be housed in this space that we own and control, so that the surplus generated by us shopping there would then be available for us to use and to keep circulating amongst ourselves. That's perfectly doable. We said in order to launch that, we'd need people to purchase a co-op unit so we can set this business in motion. Co-op units cost $1,000. Now, we recognize there are some people who do not have $1,000 today, right? Some, quite a few do. But we made it even simpler. We said, okay, here's a subscription mechanism built inside of Ulu. You pay as little as $25 a month, $50 a month, whatever works for your budget. And when you reach $1,000, you now are the owner of a co-op unit, right? The idea is that for every 1,000 members who have purchased a co-op unit of $1,000, that equals $1 million. So we see how this can very quickly grow into a very large pot or pool that we can then build cooperative businesses to meet all of our needs, from food, clothing, shelter, real estate, legal services, financial services. We can do all of that. It's just a matter of changing our behavior to say, this now is priority. I'm not going to buy this pair of Nikes this week. Instead, I'm going to put that $200 or that $150 towards building an economic institution that is driven by a philosophy of Ujamaa, which is love, so that I can pass that on to my children. So I hope I'm speaking to the question that you raised, Brother Shabaka. Let me just go on and say this. That is the difference between a cooperative model that we control and trying to protect ourselves inside of an economic model that is exploiting us every time we go to work. We are working to build a sustainable global civilization. The first building block is the economic system. In other words, we have to build these cooperative businesses. We cannot get around that. We assert that the spiritual energy at the center of our economic model must be love. That is giving, seeking nothing in return. If this resonates with your spirit, visit our webpage at usliftingus.com and join the global African family dedicated and determined to build a new people and a new world. Lastly, I just want to say this in closing, Sister Q.
Uh-huh.
This is not utopian. This is not otherworldly. We have $1.3 trillion flowing through our hands each and every year. The question is, pulling a portion of that aside and funneling it into an alternative economic cooperative model that we control. That gives us the basis to open up other cooperative businesses so that we create a network of cooperative businesses, all of them working together to provide the services that we need, but to provide it in the spirit of Ujamaa, which is familyhood. I hope some of this is making sense, because we are struggling with trying to eke out an existence in a system that is draining our resources, selling us products that we don't need, creating a dangerous environment for our children, and we're wringing our hands trying to figure out what can we do. The politicians do not have the answers. The 1% of the ruling class will not provide the answers. The answers rest within our people, within our community, and Spirit is calling us to build this. Thank you, Sister Q.
Thank you for that, Brother Ankhi. We want to thank everyone who joined us this evening. Thank the Brother Shabaka and Brother Thurman for adding to the conversation. We'd like to invite everyone to join us again next Thursday evening from 9 p.m. for another of There to Win. And also we want to remind you to go ahead and put March 10th through 12th on your calendar so you can join us for our 2023 annual members meeting and convention, and to join the Ulu community so you can give us some feedback and have some conversation about these Dare to Win programs. And with that, I will say peace.